Hello, everybody, and welcome to Dragged into Turbo Lasers. In today's episode, we're joined by Bill Ford of the Mordheim 2022 fame, and in it, we chat about a new open invitational that the blog Between the Bolter and Me started called Vestarian. And yeah, we just chat about how the invitational came about and what it is, and hope to try to get people interested to be involved in it. So with that, sit back and enjoy. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Dragged into Turbo Lasers, a miniature wargaming podcast from the people behind the blog Between the Bolter and Me. I'm your host, Eric Wire, and I'm here with my two brothers, Adam Wire.
Hey, everybody.
And Greg Wire.
Hey, everyone.
And I'm excited we're also joined by our good friend, Bill. Hey, Bill, nice to have you here.
Hey, guys, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so Bill, I think, is well known in the like this sort of 28 community for running the excellent Mordheim event, as well as being one of the main people responsible for the Rich Grimmond event in Richmond this year, particularly the Rot of Hondius event. But yeah, we're really glad to have you here and are excited to chat about, you know, all things 28, and in particular, we wanted in this episode to talk about an open invitational that we recently started called Vestarian. And yeah, just happy to have y'all here and to chat about it. As I suggested, yeah, it was, I think earlier this month or a few weeks ago, we had our inaugural post about this Vestarian or Dreams of the Pious, which is an open invitational in which we essentially just created a world within the Warhammer 40,000 setting to be the setting or the scenario that we can play a bunch of fun Ink 28 style games and just develop some weird aspects of the Imperium. But specifically, Vestarian is a large cathedral world that is just filled with cathedrals and minarets and different houses of worship and so forth.
Lighthouses.
Yes, that's right. Because there's a lot of water on the planet, so they have lots of lighthouses as well. But we wanted to set it up as a planet that, at least for a lot of its existence, it held kind of like a shaky peace throughout the entire planet, in which there were lots of different imperial cults that each have their own kind of eccentric views on the emperor and how best to worship the god emperor, and that despite those differences, they still got along somewhat and weren't like persecuted as heretics via the Ordo Hereticus or the Ecclesiarchy. But that sounds, I guess one might say, sounds interesting, but isn't necessarily a great setting for conflict, I guess. So what kind of pushes it into that direction and why you might want to play games associated with it is that we thought it would be fun if we connected it to the wider advancing Warhammer 40,000 storyline, in which after Cadia was destroyed and the Eye of Terra or Terror expanded and across and like kind of split the galaxy in two, and that led to a huge reinsurgence of a lot of psychic activity and such, we thought it would be interesting if that led to most of the inhabitants of the planet to start having weird dreams and so forth, which also led to the establishment of a lot of different psychers on the planet, each of which thought that they were essentially saints or the coming of like the emperor or the next great stage of the emperor's grand design, that sort of thing, that led to a lot of the cults on the planet to actually, I guess, have violent disagreements with one another and kind of fight each other over which is sort of the dominant cult and what the emperor's true vision is, thinking that it would just be a fun opportunity to play Ink 28 style games with weird imperial cults.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good summary of it. Yeah, so I think in general, the idea is we created sort of an interesting setting where we're hoping other people get excited about it and are interested in exploring sort of the imperial faith and different interpretations of kind of what that is and what the imperial truth means to like the citizens themselves and how differently they can interpret that and how that manifests in weird and interesting ways. And also one, as it sort of implies, one that is very human-centered, something that us as humans can sort of relate to. And I mean, there are tons of things people can draw from like the real world to sort of inspire some of the weird happenings and stuff on this planet itself.
I guess maybe some people could complain that this particular setting is taking away some of the more interesting and iconic things that Warhammer 40,000 has, like Space Marines and Tyranids and Orcs. Though I think by giving somewhat of a human limitation, ideally it will get people to think a little bit more about creating something unique. Because, I mean, I love Space Marines and Orcs and all those things as much as anyone else. But it would be nice if it wasn't just all that.
And in some sense, and this kind of gets to some of the inspiration behind it, and I think there are a lot of things that kind of led us to this, but one of those things was actually Mordheim, the Mordheim rule set, which, Bill, you're very familiar with. But one thing that I always really liked about Mordheim, one of which it's like this small skirmish game, so it's not about building huge armies, but the main thing that I think it did really well, or does really well, is that the setting is contained and the warbands in it are also kind of very humanized and sort of a low fantasy. They're at least the five initial warbands, like there aren't lizard men or high elves and dark elves. It's also more of a human-centered thing. There aren't like huge greater demons and all these things. It's like a bunch of human warbands. There's the cult of the possessed, but even those aren't like bloodletters and plague like demons and so forth. And like the vampire warband also, like there's sure there's a vampire and some zombies and skeletons, but it is kind of this lower fantasy that I think is neat. I like that there's that restriction and allowing you to focus on those concepts and doesn't have to rely on, you can take anything, like bring in all the dwarves you like and orcs and like, I mean, that's good for some things, but I like that restricted setting. So I think that was one thing that spoke to me about, like, if we wanted to kind of work within a setting, that I'd like it to be sort of mirror that.
Yeah, I think, like, when you remove, like, those kind of, like, those superpowers, you know what I mean? Like, when you remove, like, greater demons and stuff, or you basically lessen the stakes, you make it more personal. So in a way, you're actually raising the stakes to the individual and, like, kind of, like, focusing it, right? Or localizing it. So the stakes in Mordheim are actually higher because, like, you know, if you put yourself in like a human mercenary's position or something like that, they just, you know, they're surrounded by just awful crap all over the place. Or if you take Space Marines out of the equation and like the Inquisition and stuff like that, like, no one's going to come in here and solve your problem for you. Right. So it's down to like more of a humanistic level. And so, like, I think you guys are absolutely right. Like, people will be able to put themselves into the shoes of like these civilians and identify them with them more. And so in a way, in a weird way, like, the stakes are even going to be even higher.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're ultimately battling for like the salvation of humanity, or at least they think they are.
And I don't know. Some of them. This also kind of speaks to, in addition to Mordheim, I think Inquisitor is also kind of an inspiration there, in which that as well, it really did a lot for developing the Warhammer 40,000 lore, and all, particularly obviously the Inquisitor factions, but it did a lot to develop some of the different Inquisition philosophies and essentially their kind of religious beliefs around the Emperor. And it wasn't so like cut and dry cookie cutter stuff, like, oh, chaos is evil and like have to purge everyone, kill everybody, which the Inquisition often ends up being kind of, I don't know, like a hyperbole. And I think the Inquisitor rulebook Gabe Thorpe did a great job of really delving into some nuance in how different Inquisitors could all think that they were serving the Emperor and doing what's best, but some might be trying to use chaos against itself. Some might be these true diehard Puritans that are against all of that. Some are more trying to maintain the status quo of the Imperium. And I think, to me, that did a lot to develop the 40K setting to be just a more nuanced one. That was interesting that there are like these real human emotions centered around it, and like people could be kind of in opposite spectrums of how they like believe in the Emperor being their savior, but still truly believe they're doing quote unquote the right thing. And that idea of fleshing out the setting in a way that isn't just like, what's the most awful thing we can think of, like, and that's chaos. And I don't know, I like that. That appeals to me.
Yeah, you don't need to have, it doesn't always have to be like the mustache twirling villains and such. I think most people have come to realize that in general, the Imperium's not really a great place, and it's not really, but that doesn't necessarily mean that there aren't still people with motivations and people that have like their own goals and believe in what they're actually
doing. I mean, people are just living their lives in a bad universe. I mean, maybe not every planet's horrible.
Bad scene, everyone's fault.
Mm-hmm, it's true. Yeah, but so all of that sort of rambling about that, but this, I thought, by making this a cathedral sort of religious world that is filled with different divergent imperial cults, all of which, you know, think they're doing the best and they're the best way at venerating the God Emperor, but they're all pretty weird and distinct, but still they all kind of think they're putting the best foot forward and doing what is critical for humanity to succeed and doing right by the good old Emperor. And like, I like that idea that, sure, some of them, I mean, maybe some of them are actually influenced by one of the chaos gods or whatever, but even if they are, they truly believe they're, you know, following the Emperor's teaching and such. And I think that will allow for more nuance and interesting creations that aren't just like, these are the evil guys, these are the good ones. And I think that that is fun.
And I feel the setting in general, being on a cathedral world, I sort of envision it. It is a place of like learning and knowledge. So I can imagine there probably are great libraries filled with all sorts of information, that some things that people haven't really looked at for like millennium and like hundreds and hundreds of years. So I think there's a lot of room to...
Yeah, there can be some very like fundamentalist religious cults, whereas other ones that are perhaps more liberal in their leanings.
Yeah.
But I think that the idea of being able to explore that is fun. And ultimately, I feel very 40K, like the idea of these crazy cults with skulls and servitors.
They don't have to have skulls, though.
No, it's true.
All praise the Dewey Decimal System.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I guess that was sort of the concept of what we were trying to create. And I thought with like the desire to like follow up some of those ideas from Mordheim, Inquisitor and such, and particularly having played in Bill Your Mordheim event, it got me thinking a little bit about, you know, these different skirmish games and things I like and dislike. And I realized, like, I like that Mordheim has this interesting setting with these, like, this low fantasy setting, but that is rife and easy to tell interesting personal stories within that. And I thought it would be fun to kind of have a setting that could be that, but in 40K per se. And, you know, Necromunda is that to some extent, but I thought this would be to focus it a little bit more and be like virtually all weird cults.
Oh, because I feel Necromunda as a setting doesn't really delve that deeply into like the imperial religion and the imperial any of that.
I guess that's
it's the gang warfare, and
Cawdor has become the like religious one, whereas
and I feel like with the newer version of Necromunda that's obviously been out for a long time, but I feel they did their best to expand the lore and everything, and I feel in some regards have really dialed in some of the focuses of the different factions and gangs and stuff. And
I feel almost like push them to different tropes in a way, which I think is fine. They want to make all the gangs unique and so forth. But for something that I'm hoping other people might get involved in and want to create their own gangs and want to play their own games. And I kind of want something to be a little simpler than that, not feeling like the need that there needs to be these complex rule systems for every single gang and so forth. If that makes sense.
Hey, Bill gave me an idea with the Dewey Decimal System. What if we had a cult that they think that cataloging the writings of man is a way of cataloging and organizing is a way to get closer to the emperor or something?
I think that would be fun.
Science and knowledge.
Awesome.
So, like, I wonder,
the cultist you made, Adam, and we made some casts of holding the various books.
Oh, yeah, they could be part of that.
They would be very good for that. See, it's an interesting thing. Like, I feel if any listener who's interested in trying to start something with this setting, one way, if you can find a PDF of the Inquisitor rulebook, like, I'd almost be interested in just rereading all of that again, because they do, as Eric sort of mentioned, they do present a lot of different factions of Inquisitors and different beliefs and like sort of what the Emperor means to them and where the Emperor is going in the future, whether that's just staying the same or evolving into some other being. So like, I think that could be a good starting place to sort of get you thinking about different things along that nature. But I think also, as we just sort of talked about here, even just going and thinking of some aspect like the Dewey Decimal System or card cataloging and such, a lot of the stuff in the Imperium, you can often just take that and take it to an extreme and explore how some system that had meaning could be taken and subverted by like the Imperium and just what
they're good at.
Cataloging cities worth of books that nobody will ever read.
Yeah.
And they can't read. They're illiterate themselves.
Yeah, that's the spirit.
And I mean, because it would also be interesting to just try and almost like explore language and stuff, because you can sort of imagine on a planet of that size, you could even imagine like every, I don't necessarily want to say city block, but like every sector or whatever could have their own dialects and all sorts of stuff like that.
I guess
because like we obviously know the Emperor, he spoke primarily in English.
Obviously. I guess one thing that can also be mentioned, I think another thing that sort of inspired this as well was just for the 2016 Pilgrim event that Iron Sleet held, for that which we took part in, we created a deranged cult called the Church of the Red Athenaeum that essentially think pain and suffering gets them closer to the Emperor. And we, I think, had a great time kind of coming up with lore for them and building some models and such. And since then, slowly, we've built additional models to kind of go along with that cult and thought it would be fun to continue to do stuff with them, continue to build on that lore, make new models, as well as make other cults that are similar but deranged in their own unique way. And so this was just another way that we felt we could continue working on that while encouraging others to get into that same fun, creative process.
Yeah, and I think now we're, even compared to just a few years ago, we're at a good stage in the hobby with Games Workshop and everything. There are a wealth of models to make more priest-like, cult-like models. Certainly when we first started the Red Church and whatnot, like, if you wanted robed models, it's like, well, the Empire had the plastic fanatic models, and, like, that was about it.
Yeah. So things have changed a lot since that time. Just, like, all the Necromunda models, for example, and with that said, I guess the new Sister of Battle
models. Cities of Sigmar models, the Sisters of Battle, like, yeah. Lots of stuff. So in some regards, another interesting way you could approach it is to even just find a box of bottles that you always thought were cool but never had a use for, and try and see how you could merge those into a cult of some sort.
Unless that's Space Marines.
No Space Marines.
Another good source book, too, is not just the Inquisitor rulebook, if you can't get your mitts on it, but the Dark Heresy rulebook from Fantasy Flight Games.
Oh, yeah, and they have a whole bunch of different publications that went alongside that that I think were all pretty, or a lot of them were pretty good and interesting.
How many are like, still in print?
None, maybe. Just Fantasy Flight.
I mean, the Inquisitor book's not in print either, so.
Yeah, it's true.
So,
like,
South of Heaven, Steve, just ask if we're thinking about continuing Vastarian in the coming years or if it's a short-term project. Steve, it's not a short-term project. Seeing as one of the reasons we wanted to do this Vastarian thing was a way of keeping up with, like, the Church of the Red Athenaeum that we created for the Pilgrim, which we've slowly been working on for years. This, I feel like, is a way of us to continue exploring weird imperial cults and such, and maybe the more mundane aspects of human life in the Imperium, and exploring it for presumably years to come.
But also, by putting some of this out there and trying to encourage others to get involved, the hope is that we can, in the future, maybe run some events pertaining to it or encourage others to do that as well, which towards that end, Bill has actually been working on like a small, church board, essentially, that the hope is that maybe we will be able to bring that to like Adepticon this year and maybe bring some of our warbands and so forth, and maybe play some games with other people who've created stuff or just bring models and so forth. So, yeah, the hope is that it encourages a lot of back and forth with other people exploring some of these ideas and playing some games, however that kind of strikes them.
Yeah, in some regards, we've certainly brought up Mordheim a lot, but I feel Mordheim is now sort of a thing where there are small events all over the place now where people are getting together to play games and further their own storylines. And I would like a similar thing to happen with this. And we will certainly be trying to have little events and hopefully invite people to attend those. But
we're bad at doing those things. We've talked about it for years and haven't done anything. And Bill, however, is good at doing things.
So that's at least part of it.
I guess maybe we should speak a bit to some of the rules, because as much as we go on about rules not mattering and so forth, I feel for a lot of people to maybe get involved with stuff, it's good to have some sense of that and like how you could go about it. But ultimately, our thought on like putting rules to Vastarian would be more just people should use rule sets that they like and are comfortable with, and comfortable with it, they can change things and modify them to fit, you know, what they want to do with the setting or with their games. Like, I think Forbidden Psalm would be a good rule set to go with it. Like, we've seen it worked well for the Wrath of Hondius. Thank you, South of Heaven, for your work on that. But also, I think if you're more familiar with like Necromunda or games like that, I think they would work too. And that is actually, we've been playing some test games and have been primarily using the newest version of Necromunda, like 2017 or 18, whatever it is. But I guess it also has gotten a new like updated rule book that I guess we've primarily been using that. But part of that is, even though using the Necromunda rules in a general sense, like, we don't want it to get bogged down into like, you need to get like 10 different gang books to like, I'm using the Vansar gang or whatnot. Like, we've primarily just selected like one gang, they're all the same, but you can get whatever you want from the trading post and so forth, to like kind of move away from being very encumbered in like all these different rules and such, and just more enjoy the basic Necromunda system, which is not that dissimilar from most of Games Workshop games, other than I guess it's an I go you go system, which isn't that common for most of Games Workshop games. But
yeah,
I think using a system you like, I think is a good way to actually, I don't know, play games.
Finding something that you actually enjoy playing and you feel invites and sort of spurs on spontaneous and interesting interactions to further stories and narratives. Like, I think that's ultimately good.
But I think we're going to, at least for a little while, keep playing around with using like kind of a pared down version of Necromunda, primarily just because I'd like to play more of the newer version and see what I think about it.
I think in the coming weeks and months, we'll be posting on our blog different like war bands to kind of give people a sense of what we're experimenting around with and what aspects of the rules we're interested in changing or paring down. And like, ultimately, I'd be interested to hear what other people are thinking about and changing, because that in itself, I think, can invite a lot of interesting things. Certainly with Forbidden Psalm and whatnot, in any system that uses like a D20, I think we'd certainly talked about this in our different podcasts and stuff about the Rod of Hondius, but just the sheer fact that you can roll a natural 20 or a natural 1 kind of invites a lot of fun, spontaneous moments that invites the player to kind of come up with crazy and wild explanations for what has happened. And I ultimately like that.
Actually, Bill, have you played the newer version of Necromunda at all? And if so, what are your thoughts on it?
So I played the 2017 rules version with my wife, coincidentally. Mm-hmm. So I did the same thing with Mordheim. Like, I called them Miniheim and Minimunda. So they're like stripped down versions. So like a lot of the special rules and stuff are taken out. It's streamlined. Like, for Mordheim, I got rid of spells. Mm-hmm. And for Minimunda, like, I got rid of like psychic abilities and stuff like that. So like, it was very streamlined. Like, most people only had one weapon and it was like half the cost, so there was only like 3 or 4 models per side. And like, you know, my wife Haley, like, she loved it. Like, she really liked Necromunda, so that certainly helped. And I think like some of the special keywords, mm-hmm. It's easy to kind of get disoriented when you like pull up a sheet or you go in a rule book and there's 2 pages of them, and like each weapon has at least 2 special rules, and it's like, shit, man, well, this is just a las gun. Like, can't it just like shoot stuff? No, it's rapid fire and it's a laser beam and bulky, it has
it's
this.
Bulky.
It's bulky, yeah. Like, so
I hear that. I feel the stuff that we've been working and playing, some games of Necromunda has sort of pared some of that back, like I had suggested. And a lot of the, like, there's so many rules pertaining to model progression and campaign stuff, which we have kind of stripped out a lot of that as well. Like, I mean, certainly that is fine if, like, you know, you're going to be playing with a group of people and playing over the course of months or something. But if you're thinking of it like what would work well in maybe a weekend event or something like that, I think those things and all the extra rules for like, oh, did I sustain injuries and all that stuff, I don't think necessarily has a huge place there. And like, if you spent weeks converting, painting a warband, then bring them to some event and the first one, like, half of your guys permanently die, like, that's not really fun for this sort of thing. Like, you want to use those models, and again, I think that works fine if you know, like, oh, every week we're going down to the local game store and we're going to keep pounding away at this and seeing that progression. But I think if it's something that you want to focus to like 1 or 2 days, I don't think that's as necessary. And thinking about what rules are doing and how they're affecting like what you want to achieve, I think is important. And I guess all of that's to say, hopefully we will eventually have a post or two kind of talking about that. If we do end up playing Necromunda more for it, we'll probably write up some stuff about like kind of the things that we are or aren't using to help facilitate kind of storytelling in the setting.
And the same thing, like different scenarios and stuff. In the little that we've been playing, we've certainly learned that not all of the Necromunda scenarios are that cool.
No, they are not. But yeah, so
I think you could get around some of that. Like, you know, that, it's funny you guys bring that up because that's what happened to Chris Cole's brother and in Richmond. Like, he lost like half of his warband in the first game, and you know, he like talked to Martin and I was like, oh man, just fucking keep him, like, who cares. But like, one thing you could maybe do to get around it is just instead like purchase like a zealot and just have it like be baseline stats with like a las gun or king sword or something like that, you know what I mean, and just proxy that model if you wanted to go into that kind of granularity. Yeah, but tracking like, oh, he's missing an eye or he's got a peg leg now, like that kind of stuff would be very cumbersome for like a weekend, I think.
And I mean, it's certainly cool for different settings, but for a weekend, I don't think it doesn't make practical sense.
A thing you could do to probably get around it a little bit would just be if the person dies, maybe you don't necessarily lose all their war gear.
Well, how does Warcry handle some of that stuff? I kind of feel it is done in a way that, like, you don't just permanently lose people, or it's difficult to. Do you know? I haven't actually.
Like, the standard models can actually die relatively easily, but if they do, you can just buy them back, and you cannot, like, funnel in tons of gold and stuff to get them war gear and all this other stuff. So it's like the base cost of the model, and they have whatever it is they will always have. And then your heroes, they can get more seriously injured and potentially die. But again, if they die, you can just buy them again.
I guess we could talk a little bit about one of the first things we did after presenting the setting. Adam, you actually converted a quote-unquote generic cultist. Would you like to talk a little bit about that, why we decided to go about it, and so forth?
Yeah, so I guess one of the things with the setting, and certainly when we first started creating models for our initial cult for the Pilgrim event, one of the things that we did, a bunch of the models in that were converted from some of the old, like, Brian Nelson metal, like, preacher models and such. And at the time, those were some of the only models like that, aside from maybe some, like, warrior priests and such from, like, Warhammer. And so coming into this, I wanted to kind of create sort of a generic cultist, generic in the sense of they could fit within a lot of different imperial cults with different ideologies and such. And I wanted to go about it by converting one of Brian Nelson's old models and sort of doing relatively simple modifications to make the model look slightly more modern, keep making their hands a little smaller, feet a little smaller, stuff like that.
Yeah, because so, I feel the Brian Nelson models, they were released shortly after we got involved in the hobby. So they were kind of some of the first models I remember seeing and thinking were really cool, and I think they still hold up pretty well.
Mm-hmm. No, but yeah, so in this case, a pretty simple model, and we also wanted to make it such that we could relatively easily make a mold of the model and potentially cast a whole bunch of them and send them to other people who are like taking part and like making their own cults. So that was a lot of the impetus behind it. And they're also, since they're like a Warhammer model, they sort of have to have some weapon. So the only real weapon they're carrying is a small sidearm on their back. And then what they're primarily burdened with are all their holy tomes and everything. Like, the large book they're holding is like literally on a chain, and it's chained to them. And then that's not enough. They're carrying around another smaller book, and they're extolling their beliefs and like really proclaiming everything to everyone around them. And at this point, I mean, they might even be blind. They can barely talk because the words of the Emperor and the writings of the Emperor are literally flowing from their mouth. So I feel the model sort of encapsulates a lot of the weird, awful things of the Imperium.
Mm-hmm.
So it says in the Book of Rage.
As it says in the Book of Rage. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, that might be
maybe that's
the little book they're holding up there. That might be the Book of Rage.
It could be.
When we originally posted a picture of the conversion on our Instagram account, For Hydra made a comment that I thought was pretty funny. They said, the term citizen made me wonder how he goes home after a day of preaching, taking out his mouth piercing, cleaning everything, rubbing his eyes as they get accustomed to the dim light of candles, how he sits down, slowly chews his Nutra paste. I thought that was kind of funny. And yeah, just, you know, thinking about how these people live in their kind of dystopian world that seems normal to them.
Yeah.
I guess it's also worth noting that we recently posted something about a second gang, which is pertaining to a concept that Stygian Thorn has kind of championed, which are Spireheads, which are another cult that wear these sort of elaborate headpieces of temples and buildings and so forth, and kind of venerate those architectural marvels and how they kind of speak to the Emperor's grandeur and greatness. And yeah, he's done lots of great artwork and illustrations developing that idea, which at least was loosely based off some John Blanche illustrations that were done like circa 2016 in the Pilgrim stuff. But I don't know, I think since that time, seeing his work, his artwork and so forth, always made us want to do more with the Spirehead idea. And actually, Adam, you actually did convert a Spirehead for the Wrath of Hondius. But in around that same time, we were thinking about including them in the Vastarian event, and actually got Anna from Gardens of Hakate to build a few Spireheads for like a warband. So we commissioned her to do that and made just a wonderful collection of weird cultists that, amazingly, like, none of them really have weapons. They're all just holding interesting religious artifacts and so forth, which I think in itself is fun, like building warbands that don't have to be like, and they all have plasma rifles and, you know, and not focusing on that, like, how can you make a powerful gang, but just make a characterful, interesting one.
I mean, in all honesty, like, who knows what they have underneath all those heavy robes, all those starched robes. I mean, maybe each of them is carrying a plasma rifle.
Maybe. Probably just chain reclaimed auto pistols and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, soon we're going to, I think, start to put up some battle reports from some of the Necromunda games and stuff we'd played, just to take some fun pictures of some of these models and gangs, just to continue to develop the setting and show people some of the cool stuff you could potentially be doing.
Yeah, it's like, look how much fun we're having. You could too.
that's right. But I guess, yeah, ultimately, I'm just excited to share some of the stuff we've been working on for a little while and hope it interests other people and them to create their own interesting facets into the Imperial religion.
That's right.
I guess we could maybe talk briefly about, in the first post that we had that's introduced the setting, and so forth, it also had some suggested readings and stuff like music to listen to. I think we could maybe talk a little bit about that. One of the main things was, and actually is where the name Vestarian came from, is actually a short story by Thomas Ligotti, who is a current weird fiction horror writer that writes a lot of cool short stories that often pertain to dreams and people's place within the world, and often how meaningless people's existence are. And I've been reading a bunch of his stories in like the last year or so, and it felt in some sense very 40K. And that led to some of the ideas and stuff in the setting. And I think ultimately I would encourage other people to try to read some of his short stories, or even a lot of them you can find on YouTube. People will read them, that so you can just listen to some of the interesting short stories that I would suggest people to take some time to do and help you just kind of get in the grim mindset of 40K and so forth.
Yeah. Agreed.
For listening, some of the things that we listed, the first is a collaborative album by Earth and The Bug. So Earth is a drone metal band that started in the early 90s and kind of emerged into a minimalistic Americana sort of band. And The Bug is a British DJ / musician that kind of does some electronic musician stuff and kind of dubstep sort of stuff. And they did this collaborative album called Concrete Desert that was kind of looking at bleak futures with concrete buildings and that sort of stuff. And it's an all instrumental album. And I think that kind of gets to the theme that we're looking at. Lingua Ignota is she started out as a noise based artist and then has kind of combined noise with operatic singing and kind of religious song structures to create a really interesting collection of music that goes from being beautiful to harrowing at times. And I think that also does a pretty good job of showing what the Imperium of Man can do or can be.
Yeah, no. So I think, some of that stuff I think is fun to listen to or experience. And don't know, it's always good to find a new author of weird fiction, or at least I like it. Yeah. Particularly coming off of October and the Halloween season.
Agreed.
Yeah, and that new album that just released, Greg, you mentioned earlier about Atrium Carceri.
Yeah, so Atrium Carceri is a dark ambient project. I now forget the name of the musician, but he runs a dark ambient label called Cryo Chamber, and the work that he does is slow electronic ambient sort of stuff that I think is very appropriate as a soundscape for Warhammer sort of games, particularly in the sort of Inquisitor 28 sort of stuff that we were all interested in. And yeah, one of his projects, Atrium Carceri, just released a new album. It may not have been today. It might be a day or so ago. What was that, Eric?
Is it called Forgotten Gods, maybe? The album?
I believe that's what it's called. It's not on Bandcamp yet, but it's on Cryo Chambers. Or it's not on Spotify, let me correct myself. It's on Cryo Chambers' Bandcamp page.
Yeah, okay.
Do you think Cryo Chambers, in reference to the chamber that you cryogenically freeze your samples for electron microscopy?
It could be.
Probably not, but I'd like to think it is.
Yeah, it's fair. That's fair. Yeah, well, I guess maybe we can wrap this up, but yeah, I hope it gave people at least a little dive into kind of what we've been thinking about here and detailing on some of our more recent blog posts, but something that I hope to continue to expand in the future, and also hope that people will get involved, reach out to us about ideas or things of that nature, maybe play some of your own games, and just, you know, get excited about creating stuff and not feeling like you have to adhere too slavishly to just Games Workshop games in particular, but still maybe enjoy the setting and the aspects of it that you think are fun and cool. But with that, yeah. Does anyone else have any comments they'd like to add about that? Or?
Make your own imperial religion.
Yeah, that's right.
Or at least explore the possibilities.
Yeah, and yeah, at any time, reach out to us. Like, I'd love to hear your thoughts about Thomas Ligotti, or if you listen to any of the music or anything like that. But
yeah,
thanks everybody for taking the time to listen, and we hope to talk to you again soon. Thanks for listening to another episode of Dragged into Turbo Lasers. If you have any questions or suggestions, don't hesitate to contact us through Instagram or leave a comment on our YouTube channel or on our blog, BetweenTheBolterAndMe.com. We also stream on Twitch every week and would love to hear from you there as well. If you'd like to support us, please feel free to leave a review of our podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts, or subscribe to our channel on YouTube and Twitch.